This episode of Branching Out is brought to you by Levi Gelineau and United Agencies Insurance.
Welcome to Branching Out, a podcast presented by the reporters and editors of the Acorn newspapers, offering you a closer look at the news in your community.
Welcome to Branching Out. It is Monday, April 5th. My name is Ian Bradley, joined as always by Kyle Jory. We're back.
Editor of the Thousand
Acorn. No one cares, Kyle. No one cares. No, we're back. The Women's History Month thing was great. It was really cool hearing all those episodes and taking a step back and just kind of editing the show. I know you didn't do a ton besides like listen to stuff.
I became a listener, and I just was blown away by how well everyone did, down to each of them. You know, you just see the difference it makes. You could tell the passion they had for what they were reporting on and talking about.
Yeah.
I think that really came across, and hopefully it was a chance for some of our listeners to meet more of our team. All right, well, it is good to be back. Excited to be back. Today we have a special guest. If you read the sports page of the Acorn, then you know, of course, Eliav Applebaum, the Snot Otter.
I don't know if that reference is going to land for a lot of people, but I love it.
He's going to come on today and share with us a little bit about what's going on with sports coming back. Since we were last on, feels like just a wave of high school sports have resumed, and Eliav's been out there trying to cover it as best he can. So he's going to check in there. And I'm sure you've been keeping up with all the sports action, right?
I really have, actually, yeah.
Who are your Final Four picks, Ian?
I don't want to give it away. In case I do well, I don't need anybody coming after me.
Well, he's going to come on and update us on sports, and then we are going to get to a conversation I had a couple weeks ago with the Ventura County Community College District and some of their representatives to update us on their progress and what it looks like in the fall for their return.
Eliav, thanks so much for joining us. I know you were just saying it's been a very busy week because you're back. So we appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. First question I want to ask, you're a sports reporter. You're the sports editor for the Acorn. That's your thing. Obviously, sports are only just now getting going. So what has the last year been for you? Just inventive ways to keep telling sports stories while the sports hasn't been happening? Like, what have you been doing?
Yeah, I tried to keep things fresh. I try not, a lot of people without games, people are uncreative and feel like without games, you can't write. I was the opposite. We've always been long, kind of like big picture stories,
yeah,
features. And I think that served us well because I love doing those stories. Plus kids are playing, college kind of resumed and I could do notebooks on pro athletes in college, but also high school kids were still getting scholarships. Mm-hmm. Kids were still training hard. So I did a lot of those profiles. That's kind of my wheelhouse anyway.
Yeah.
And we were busy. There's really kids, just because sports game stops doesn't mean kids don't stop training or working hard. And so I'm thinking of Julian Stokes, a running back out of Grace Brethren, mm-hmm, who lives in Newbury Park. He's going to Penn. Stories like him and others.
Yeah.
So I was always busy in the summer and this last year.
You did. I'm blanking on what it was right now, but I remember you wrote a column relatively recently that was like
the British Baking Show.
Yeah, the Great British Bake Off one. That was a great piece of writing. You were really flexing some creative muscle in terms of keeping the spirit of competition alive while relating it to.
Yeah, not just writing for sports fans, but writing for.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I had, that was a lot of fun. That's probably my best column as far as creativity. And that was just, I was watching a show and I was like not into it. And then over time, you just watch what my wife watches. So we got into it and I just kind of woke up in the middle of the night, wrote down an idea for a column. And from there, it kind of just went on from there. It was a great column.
It's a quintessential Applebaum piece if you guys haven't
seen it. We'll link that one in the show notes because I loved it so much. It was such a good piece.
You got to read it.
And so, people who don't like sports like that, which is really what I try to do. Yeah. If I can get people who don't read sports to enjoy stuff, that I've done my job very well.
So you say you've been busy without there being games. Well, now we have like the polar opposite, being that we have, feels like, more high school sports going on at once, right?
Yeah.
Than even with some teams not back, like basketball.
Basketball's back too.
Oh,
everything is back, right?
So
right
at
now,
the same time.
Everything is back at once. I believe girls volleyball and girls water polo, their seasons lasted a week to 2 weeks, and that was it. But
otherwise, everyone is
Everyone's back right now, either playing or training. Really, everything's back right this second.
Yes. Yeah, so what is
how? Maybe cross country just wrapped up. But I mean, you can't cover. I mean, I think I did the math. It's about 200 varsity teams, maybe more, maybe 250 among all our areas, all going on at once. There's no way I couldn't cover it all. So again, I just try to find people to reach out, are nice, are send nice emails. Eliav@theacorn.com. Please send me stuff if you have story ideas or want me to cover something. I still am open to covering stuff.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking of is a lot of times when no one knows this. I used to be the sports editor when I started here. So I know a little bit. It was just a brief time, nothing like your run, Rain. I know a lot of times I would learn about athletes you to write about from watching games. You know, you didn't really have that ability. How did you get story ideas?
Twitter's a good source, believe it or not. High school kids kind of show their clips. Them were either training or game clips or film, or they tag you, or you just kind of follow athletes. I find high school athletes are almost do a better job than some coaches as far as kind of promoting themselves. And it's good to promote yourselves. That's how I got, there was a story on special teams at football players. There was one kid, these kids kind of show their clips because they're able to train during the coronavirus lockdown. They were still able to train, but they'd promote themselves on by showing, because they were still able to work out, because that sport, that kicking and punting is naturally distant, socially distant. And from them, I saw their clips. A lot of guys are local in the area, and I just reached out to them. Plus, I called some coaches of kids who I didn't see online, and I did this big, actually two-part story in the middle of the summer.
From something you saw on Twitter?
Really, something I saw on Twitter.
Yeah,
because otherwise I wouldn't have seen these. I wouldn't have known about these kids.
So now everything is happening at once, but it's also going to be, before we know it, it's going to be over, right? So the seasons are so abbreviated. Tell me, I mean, is it different for each sport? Or?
So I think baseball and softball have pretty much full regular seasons. At least they're playing 20-plus games, a lot of teams. Football's an abbreviated season. Calabasas plays three games, for instance, three to five. A lot of teams play five. I think that's the max, 5 to 6 games for our teams.
And no playoffs?
No playoffs, no league championships, none of that.
What is your sense in talking to the athletes and coaches? I mean, we're all thrilled they're back out there. I think parents certainly and a lot of other people. But for them, it seems so anticlimactic. I mean, to not get a – I mean, I'm sure they're happy they're back, but to not get a play for a title, I mean, what?
I think they're just happy to play. And instead of just training, I think when you actually get to play a game against somebody other than your teammates or working out, it's just – even if it's one or two games, I was talking to cross-country runners, same thing, where they only had a handful of meets. But those meets meant the world to them. And it was more about competing than the final results, I think. I don't think – like I'm not really – stats are great, and I do wish coaches kept better stats. But it's about actually playing, and that's been the big story, is just everyone's playing. And I think we've tried to do online just everyone's playing at once, and it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of pure, right? Straight – we have rivals playing each other. You're not going for any really title. It's just, hey, I'm thrilled to be.
Yeah, I think it shows. I think sportsmanship hopefully will take a front seat. I like what Oak Park and Agoura Football did, where they're going to try to make this Cannon Bowl rivalry special and really make it community centric rather than. I don't want to talk trash on any rivalry, but a lot of it, there's a lot of negative feelings. I'm thinking Simi Royal Football is kind of like. It's not a friendly rivalry. It's more it's intense. I think Westlake Oaks is kind of a more intense rivalry. I think Agoura Oak Park Football, what they're doing is kind of, I think, what we're going to see in the future. Maybe Newbury Park Teal will go down that road too. I think that less intense rivalry, where it's more about community, you can play hard on the field, but I think that trash talking is going to hopefully disappear.
Proponents, like, you know, health conscious proponents of the lockdown and everything might be saying, like, yes, I know you want your kids back in school. I know you want sports to resume, but we need to stay locked down until things calm down. And it'd be easy to say, like, well, you guys are only getting to play three games, so maybe we're rushing into this thing for no real reward other than the three games before the season's done. So is it even worth it? And it sounds like you're saying it's very much worth it for these kids to be able – just even for two or three matches.
But I think safety is more important than anything. Like, I'm not ready. Like, myself, you know, I think it's more important for kids to be in school personally.
Yeah.
I think education should come first.
Yeah.
And I think the social stuff is also very important too. And I think getting kids in schools probably should be the bigger priority. Obviously, sports has such a a big force and people want their kids to be playing sports, but I mean, you got to balance the two.
Yeah.
I understand the enthusiasm. I'm glad sports are back, but, and knock on wood, I think everything's been safe. I haven't heard of cases or games canceling that frequently. I haven't heard of any breakouts.
Yeah.
Granted, they're not testing. I don't know the level of testing. So, but we have not seen massive, we've seen games canceled and teams canceled here and there. And I think, but there hasn't been any breakout at a school that I've heard about.
Another thing you've done during this time, which I really like, is highlight some of our former star athletes and what they're doing now. Cause you're so much usually covering the high schools and that's a grind week in and week out.
Yeah.
You've had a little more chance to look out and see what our former athletes are doing, which I really enjoy. This was a big week for former Acorn Country athletes. Can you share a little bit about it? Yeah, sure. I saw.
I'll make it three quick things. Jaime Jaquez Jr., Camarillo High grad, born and raised in Camarillo. He's in the Final Four with UCLA men's basketball. I think he's not just a guy, he's a star. He's a guy who could probably play in the NBA if he gets a better three-point shot. So he's in the Final Four. They play Saturday against Gonzaga. Crazy. By the time this comes out, whenever it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know when it is, but he's in the Final Four. They're playing Gonzaga. The title game is April 5th, Monday. It's a big deal. Just the fact that UCLA, 11 seed, made it. Nobody expected them to go this far. Another story, Paul Hippler, Oaks Christian grad, Camarillo, another Camarillo native. Abilene Christian, small school, but he kind of went viral early in the tournament. I have a story that came out in the Acorn, Thousand Oaks Acorn, and I think Simi Valley and Moore Park this week. And he's a guy, just a great story. I definitely recommend if you pick up the Acorn this week. I had a feature, kind of a column slash feature on Paul, and it's also one of my better stories, I think. Third story, real quick, Pepperdine shout out to Colby Ross. Mm-hmm. Yesterday I said he should go for the NBA draft, or I wrote something he's probably going to. Today he declared for the NBA draft. He's only guy in college basketball history, 2,200 points, 800 assists, 400 rebounds. The only guy to do it, and he's from Pepperdine.
So yeah, I mean, there has not been – we can count the number of Pepperdine players who went to the NBA probably on one hand. Yeah.
Well, Dennis Johnson won a title, was the best player on the Seattle Supersonics in 79. Doug Christie with the Kings had a great run. There's a few other guys.
But we're forgetting one person I want to definitely mention. Tara Davis, one of my favorites.
Tara Davis.
Oh, jeez.
It's okay.
She's so my favorite that I don't know her name.
No, it's okay. Tara Davis, Agoura High. She was at Georgia, and then she got hurt, and then she transferred. So there was about 2 years she was kind of off the radar. Not our radar.
When she was in high school, she was a star. I mean,
back-to-back years, second-place state team finals alone. Solo athlete. I mean, incredible athlete. She basically could have won state by herself. Almost did it twice. Like, crazy. Crazy great athlete. And trying to be an Olympian, she set back-to-back weeks. Broke a college record most recently. Jackie Joyner-Kersee. Tara Davis at Texas, University of Texas athlete, track and field. I mean, long jump. She was a cheerleader in high school too. Great kid, really great personality, big personality. I'd love to see her in the Olympics this summer if the Olympics go forward in Tokyo.
That's so big. I mean, it's so hard to of all the time you covered sports. I mean, an Olympian. I mean, we've seen some amazing track athletes. Sarah Baxter comes to mind. But they never – the Olympics is so
– And even in college, it's hard to do what you do in college. Nico Young, you know, Newbury Park, I don't know, we should mention him. I mean, he goes from winning track cross-country national section, state national champions at Newbury Park. Nico Young, Northern Arizona first year, I think he finishes fourth, and his team, Northern Arizona, wins a national title. So he goes from national champions in high school to national champions in college. Nico Young, another Camarillo guy. He went to Newbury Park High School, but he's a Camarillo guy. Nico Young, and his brother's doing very well right now.
Big time for Camarillo, and to think we'd have two Olympians potentially. Elliot, I appreciate you taking the time to come out and talk.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Our sponsor this week is Levi Gelino and United Agencies Insurance. Levi loves business insurance, so you don't have to. He can help businesses of any size with workers' comp and liability insurance, but he also recognizes the average branching out listener might not need his services, so he's doing something pretty cool. Levi's donating the rest of his ad time to a local nonprofit he's passionate about, Interface Child and Family Services. Headquartered in Camarillo, Interface provides critical services to children and families across Ventura County.
In 2020, Interface provided 160 families affected by domestic violence with safe shelters and also provided over 10,000 hours of mental health counseling and support. To donate or for more information on Interface Child and Family Services, please go to www.icfs.org. For any insurance questions imaginable, email Levi at levi@ua-insurance.com.
All right, so I am joined today by a trio of representatives from the Ventura County Community College District, here to talk a little bit about what's going on with the district and their look ahead to the rest of this semester, and especially the semester in the fall, when it looks like right now, fingers crossed, where things will be returned to normal. So first, thank all of you for being here. And if you could just kind of run down, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do for the Community College District, starting with you, Greg.
Yes, thanks, Kyle. And I'm Greg Gillespie. I'm Chancellor of the Ventura County Community College District. I've served in the district for just over 7 years, started as Ventura College President, and have been serving as Chancellor in my fourth year.
Okay. Next, Cynthia.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Herrera, and I am the Associate Vice Chancellor of Strategic Partnerships, Enrollment, and Advancement. I've been with the district about a year, year and a half, and it's a relatively new position. It covers anything to do with our K-12 partners in dual enrollment, career education, anything to do with access to education and advancement. So it's a big role.
Perfect.
And now, last but not... She said she's new with the district. Keep in mind, we had to drag her away from Oxford College when they were hanging on, kicking and screaming. So
I get
she's
it.
She's new to the district office.
So if you recognize that voice, and if you're in Thousand Oaks, I'm sure you do that, of course, is Diane McKay, who wears many hats. But Diane, explain your role with the Community College District and why you're here today.
I'm here today just because I wanted to participate. I've been bugging you to give us a little airtime for the community colleges in Thousand Oaks. I'm the Area 2 representative. I'm elected to represent the community colleges on behalf of Area 2, which is Oak Park, unincorporated Ventura, Thousand Oaks, a bit of Somas, little section of Camarillo. And my job with my four fellow trustees is to look at everything from a policy level. And it's our responsibility to make sure the colleges aren't just strong today, but they're strong for our grandkids and our grandkids' grandkids in the future.
Thank you. Now, it's interesting. I'm sure a lot of people that are tuning in know, you know, each of your campuses and colleges well. But this summer, the campus that kept coming up, at least in the Acorn coverage, was, of course, Moore Park College. And not because of any classes you're offering, but because that was turned into one of our testing sites. And it became extremely popular. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came together? And because it certainly benefited a lot of residents. I know it was tough on traffic at times. But yeah, tell me about that partnership and how that all came to be with the Moore Park.
Sure. Well, we do have a strong connection with Ventura County. So we did work with the Ventura County's CEO office, as well as Department of Public Health, and made them aware that we're available to serve as sites to help with the pandemic. And we have a relationship to serve as an emergency site for any type of event that may come up. So at one time, we actually had testing going on at all three of our college campuses. And then as the county opened up other sites, we ended up just now needing Moore Park College at this time.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people appreciate that and what a, you know, again, a sacrifice for your staff. And I know it was staffed by the county and other people, but just to give up the space to do it and it became a real go-to for a lot of residents. Cynthia, maybe.
Well, I will add real quick that it made it a little bit easier with the fact that 90% of our classes are online right now, so our parking lots aren't quite as full as we'd like them to be. But, you know, the good thing is we're still able to be providing classes and support services to students. It's just in a different way.
I get it. But some people learn their way around Moore Park College that maybe hadn't known it before. So
right.
That's a good thing. So let's, before we look ahead, Cynthia, can we talk about, I know you work with students and faculty, just how the college experience and has been for students in the district, and how you feel about how teachers have adapted to going online and how students have responded. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think it's gone surprisingly well. The transition took a little bit of time, but I think that because it was done systematically, and for faculty that needed some training in remote teaching, received that opportunity. There was a lot of equipment that was rolled out to both faculty and students to assist them in working remotely. I think that over the last year, we've actually learned quite a bit, and going predominantly all online and then some hybrid, like some of our labs that are hard to convert. We did the protective equipment and the social distancing, and we had minimal face-to-face, but we did have a little bit of that. But overall, the success rates have maintained, and we thought maybe we might have a little challenge there working remotely, but our success rates have maintained, so we're happy about that. And I do believe that the district has done a really great job of listening to faculty needs and listening to the student needs and responding wherever appropriate. So I think we've done very well.
I also think it's worth mentioning that Oxnard College just won a National Bellwether Award for the Fire Academy program. And the program itself is a fantastic program, but what they won the award for is how quickly and with great quality they were able to turn that around, because that had to stay face-to-face. We have to continue to put out those first responders, whether it's nursing or firefighters. And so what they won the national award for is how quickly they were able to get back up and running after the pandemic. So, you know, hats off to Oxnard College and that fire program being able to do that.
And it was recognized by the state.
Okay.
And so it was replicated across the state, the format and the structure that they came up with across the state.
During the pandemic?
Yeah. During the pandemic. Yeah.
And Diane, from your perspective, I mean, you've been such a, you know, cheerleader for the district and the quality of education that students get there. Were you concerned at all, you know, as this transition was going, that would suffer? And what did you do? And what did the board try to do, I guess, to equip our faculty and our schools with everything they needed to keep up that quality of education that they've become known for?
I mean, I think the best thing we could do, of course, we were concerned about students. I mean, you think of basic math and foundational math courses, and are they going to be able to really learn? So making sure that tutoring was beefed up and that, you know, class sizes were at a decent size so that the students could really learn. But from our, you know, that's what the educators do. From a policy standpoint, the main thing we do is made sure the resources were available. We had to open up, you know, our bank account into the reserves. That's what they're there for, their rainy day reserves. And, you know, it wasn't raining, but it was a pandemic. I mean, I think we're getting locusts next, because we've had fires and we've had the borderline incident. So we are going to wait. We have an earthquake next year, I'm done. So
let's hope not.
No, truly, it was making sure that our faculty and students have the resources that they need. And, you know, if we need to do more, we do more. We're a conservative district, so we do. Some people think we have reserves that are too large, but at times like this, I don't think you can have a big enough savings account.
Yeah. I mean, I think the costs involved with some of this, and it's been pretty incredible where money has been able to come from. Where do we have an idea yet? I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of reporting in terms of enrollment coming for this next fall. You would think with some students having stayed home and at their universities, they might say, "Hey, if I'm going to be online, or you know, I like sticking around." You might actually see more students turning to the community college system.
Yes. Yeah, so what we're hoping is to actually start to see an enrollment increase as we move towards fall. During the pandemic, the enrollment at our three colleges has decreased just under 10% during the period. And a lot of the students who have not returned to our colleges have struggled somewhat in the online environment, or they've had a lot of challenges with needing to work to have money during the pandemic due to unemployment with family members, or to help just with childcare and all of that. So as we move towards fall, our focus is really getting those students that have had to take on those other responsibilities, re-engage and get back into class with that, with us. And we know that one of the best ways to do that is to start increasing the number of on-site classes that we have again, because there's a number of challenges for some students with the online environment, whether it be internet connection or just not having a quiet place at home to be able to study. So the best way we can help them is to get opened back up.
Yeah.
So as we move to fall, our colleges are planning schedules to where we reopen, but that reopening is going to look different than a normal year. We're expecting that all of our employees will have the opportunity to get vaccinated between now and the start of fall semester, and that's going to help us get employees back to work. We've been running at about 90% of our classes online, right, during through the pandemic. The colleges are hoping to have at least 50% of their classes with on-campus component moving into fall. And the reason that we're planning that 50% number is that we still have to operate under the Cal/OSHA regulations right now. And we have to plan under those regulations. And those regulations require wearing a mask, providing plenty of sanitation stations, 6 feet social distancing, doing a pre-screening, doing contact tracing. It's quite a list of things that we need to do, and it's a logistical trick to kind of get all that pulled together. And the more students you bring on, the more challenging that becomes. But our colleges have been practicing by continuing to have classes throughout the pandemic, and we'll just ramp that up more. The ideal is that those regulations will change moving towards fall, and we can open up even more. Throughout this pandemic, all the guidance from the CDC, public health, you know, Cal/OSHA, it has been dynamic and evolving, and we just work to evolve with it. But our
priority—that's a nice way to put it. That's a nice way to put it. Dynamic. I like that.
Yeah,
I might choose a very friendly word.
Right. Right. But the best thing, you know, our priority is always to just bring as many students back on campus as we can, according to the conditions that exist at the time.
How is that going to affect your ability to start to enroll students in courses?
Yeah, so the way we're handling that is registration is going to be opening up mid to late April, and we have to have our schedule set prior to that, of course. So for a lot of our classes that have a face-to-face component, there will be a statement there that this class may revert to remote or online depending upon conditions. So we can still create, you know, a schedule with just some disclaimers in there that help explain people what changes might need to occur over time.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the unique groups is obviously the students that were freshmen this year that really never got onto campus, right? So they'll actually be coming back next year in some ways as freshmen, new to the campus. I think about, again, now looking at, and we'll touch on what I think is so unique about the district is, your really close relationship with our individual schools and our communities and kind of creating that pipeline, working together so that students can get, you know, if a four-year college isn't their goal, if it's a job, some kind of tech education, there's this kind of course they know they can go on and they can continue that education. Is that get disrupted with the pandemic and just been what's going on with their high schools, or is that going to continue on seamlessly, or are there going to be some adjustments needed? You know.
Well, I'll give you an example at Moore Park. This past week, we had a Career Center event where everything was online. And we had 600 high school participants in the event that went over two and a half days. And so I do believe that we are still actively involved in our outreach. We're just doing it remotely. We also are meeting with the superintendents and the administrators through Zoom meetings and webinars to stay connected, to talk to them about dual enrollment opportunities, to talk to them about apprenticeship opportunities, and keeping our strong connection with our partners. So again, I think we've learned a lot over this year that we can continue on with our engagement with our partners. We just have to do it a little differently through Zoom.
Yeah, and just to add to that, you know, we have learned a lot as a result of responding to the pandemic. At one time, we had 20 to 25% of our classes online before the pandemic. And, you know, we will likely have a new normal moving forward. And we don't know really what that new normal will look like yet, but I fully expect that we'll have a higher percentage of online classes because it actually does work with a lot of our students' schedules much better. And we used to really not have a lot of online access for financial aid, for tutoring, to, you know, get registered, all of these student services, counseling. Now that's all happening online. So we will continue to maintain, a face-to-face component in all of our student services, but that online component as well, because we want to really continue to have quality online access for people who need that to be able to participate in higher education. So,
well, it's great if you don't have to hire a babysitter for your advising appointment. If you can do that online, then you're providing student services, and whether it's a financial aid appointment or an advising appointment, I think we're going to see a lot of that done online based on what the student feedback is, because it is, it's just more convenient. The classes they want face-to-face, but some of these other really important student services that sometimes get missed because your babysitter didn't show up or something, you know, transportation's a problem, that takes that away and makes it easier for some of our students.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So not just think about classes, but some of these other services where they need to reach out and talk to somebody. How much, again, I think we don't know how much to normal will return or how big the impact of this last year will be, but you've got to think the job outlook and just the outlook for students has changed somewhat as the economy struggled and they've seen their families struggle and just maybe it's seen a heightened importance on work, you know, going to college and getting work experience. Can we talk a little about, I know Cynthia is really proud about, you know, just some of what they've done, even pre-pandemic, that the system, the district has done to really pump up these classes that get people ready to go right to work. And
she should be proud because I mean, we had, I think it was 10 CEOs from manufacturers come to a board meeting one night and tell us that we weren't meeting their needs. They needed more manufacturing ready labor to keep these. Manufacturing is the biggest, you know, economic driver of Ventura County. Most people don't know that, but it is. And I think Cynthia, she rose to that occasion. That was right when she came on board, and that's what we handed to her. Hey, Cynthia, fix this problem. And she did, which we have.
One of the things that we're really focusing on is when we create any type of pathway for our student, we're thinking about how we do it online, then the next step of how we do it as a hybrid, which is part online and part face-to-face, and then how we do it face-to-face. So we have three different modalities that we're able to prepare for, depending on what the scenario is with COVID coming in fall or the summer. But what we have also done is we've done a real focused outreach, and we are working with, I'll take the manufacturers. We have hired a consultant to come in and be the liaison between the industry, manufacturer, and our education, because we needed someone that really spoke the manufacturer's language. Yeah. And we created a curriculum that is flexible, that is hybrid, because we do have some face-to-face yet, because they have to do work with like a CNC machine. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to do predominantly most of it online. And we've been able also to continue on with apprenticeship placements during COVID, which is extremely difficult, but it's really beneficial to our students, because our students go and they work and they get paid. And then while they're working and get paid, they also attend college and they get their college credit, either they towards a certificate or a degree pathway. We've actually expanded our pathways in manufacturing to include an associate's degree. Before it was just a certificate. So we have advanced manufacturing associate's degree. So we have internships, we have apprenticeships, we have industry actively working very closely with us, and we have student placement. And we're taking.
Can you drop some names of businesses? Did you mind some of these employers that you've worked with? Do you mind
mentioning
manufacturing?
Sorry. Well, like Haas Automation, is, you know, Peter Zierhut, he is actively involved and really wanting to work with us. Skyworks, we've started working with them in a contract education mode. Wow. And offering where they paid for, and now we're getting their students coming into the manufacturing pathway. Mm-hmm. So we have, there's probably 100 different manufacturers, small all the way to large manufacturers, that John Clark, who is the department chair, is working with on a regular basis.
Yeah, AeroVironments came in for, we had a subsequent meeting to meet with them, and AeroVironments was there, Milgard Windows was there. It was the gamut of who, you know, who is the economic engine in Ventura County.
I want to transition, you know, there's been a ton of talk this year after last summer's protests and a real renewed focus on diversity and inclusion and equity. And we've seen in our own county how COVID is, you know, affected really our Hispanic population to a higher degree than any other, and certainly our low income as well. Can we spend some time, I know it's a real general question, and to talk about what the community college district has been doing in that arena, you know, both in terms of better serving students of color and also low income students, and just making it so any student can come there and succeed. Can we?
I'll jump in first from a policy level. For the board, it's really important. We have an ad hoc committee made up of Trustee Gabriela Torres and myself, and it is our focus to make sure that all of our policies look at diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, look at it with that lens to make sure that there's not anything that is a bottleneck and holding people up. And we're going to do some implicit bias training at the board level and staff level. And I think it is something that we all so believe in. And it will be transformative over time, but it does take time.
Yep.
But we have done, we're doing the work all the time to make sure that the decisions, and it's statewide on even the statewide committees that I serve on, we make sure that the presenters at our conferences are diverse and that you know, equity piece is there. And, you know, equity isn't equal, it's equity. And so we're really, there isn't anything from a policy level that we're not trying to reconsider and make sure that we're not part of the problem.
Okay. Greg, do you want to talk
about that? And then I was going to say, and then that parallels on the operational side as well. So we're really looking at how we operate, how students register, how they access financial aid, counseling, how they're worked with faculty and staff across the campus, so that we don't have any institutional barriers or systems of oppression set up that again, were not intended to be barriers or to be oppressive, but as we learn more, we can now assess better and make those needed changes for everybody. And I'm really pleased about the level of engagement across the three colleges on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Each one have now strong work groups taking this on to better look at their curriculum and make changes so that it reflects a diverse history of whether it's a science class or a psychology class, any of those types of classes, and that's needed. And also just helping everyone understand the importance of creating a diverse group of employees, especially on our instructional faculty side. Faculty are the ones our students interact with the most, and training our people that are on search committees to be free of bias and really work towards the importance of developing a diverse population of faculty is going to help us serve our communities better.
I do want to give you a chance to all, or at least a couple of you answer this question.
and we could have probably asked it 20 years ago, but we also know there's listeners and parents out there that, you know, they're committed. They want their kid to go to a 4-year college, and that's what they're sure they should do. And they almost look at, oh, going to Moore Park is Ventura. It's almost settling. Oh, they're only going there. What do you say to these parents, you know, to try to explain that, you know, the opportunities and what a student can get at your college is on par with one of these larger universities. I mean, that going to Moore Park or Ventura Oxnard is not something that a student should be disappointed about or feel less than.
From my perspective, I always say, first of all, it's not just Moore Park. It's called Moore Park College. And for parents, it is a place, especially if you don't have a student that knows exactly what they want to do. There's no reason for them to feel that pressure. There's lots of options, even though we do put them on a pathway towards something. Yeah. It's a pathway with lots of forks in the road that aren't costing you, you know, $50,000, $60,000 a year. And even if you have 4 years saved up in your college fund, use it to get a master's degree. I would still say come to our college, Moore Park. You have a much higher chance of getting into one of those tough to get in 4-year universities from Moore Park than you do straight out of high school. Yep. And really, you know, it looks great. You have your AA degree from Moore Park and your bachelor's from the whatever I wanted to be there university. And you have a much higher chance of getting that bachelor's degree from that university from Moore Park than you do out of high school.
So I would add that, there's also a wide range of options for, you know, your student just graduating. And for a lot of our students, they are interested in just getting right into the workforce. So if people have an interest in welding and automotive and nursing and dental hygiene, in some of the business disciplines, networking, internet security, they can get one of our 2-year degrees and have a great career with salaries that are comparable or better than a bachelor degree level work. So there's that component that is unique to community colleges, really. And then on the transfer side, a person's first 2 years are really focused around getting your general ed requirements done. And you can do that at a much lower cost at a community college and get just, I'd say, a better foundation, because you're going to be taught by instructors that's their job is teaching. They're not there doing teaching and research. And it, from a parent standpoint, you'd have maybe money left over to help your student get not just the associate of community, a bachelor's degree at a 4-year, but then a master's degree as well with the money that you save. So it's really a good financial reason in addition to it being a quality education.
One thing we haven't talked to, maybe Greg can address, there are people that are interested in sports too. A lot of our athletes, we see them go from TO or from Westlake or CME, and suddenly they're playing sports at Moore Park. Are the colleges also receiving news about being able to resume sports soon? What's the status there, Greg?
Yeah, so for this spring semester, we are looking forward to having what's called a spring 2 sports season. So baseball, softball, beach volleyball, some of our track and field, our spring events will have a shortened season this spring as long as the pandemic conditions keep decreasing there. Okay. And of course, we have to do a lot of testing for the student athletes, but we'll be meeting all those requirements. Now, we're hoping for fall that we'll be able to open up to have the fall sports again, you know, like football, basketball, volleyball, all of those. It's a little too early to say for sure, but things are looking very positive for that.
Good. Another thing I just, in terms of advice for parents, there's been a lot of, fortunately, or maybe not enough, financial relief out there through different things, whether it's for businesses, parents, whatever. What's out there in terms of colleges? Is there things kids can be looking at? I mean, it's already obviously a great deal to go to Moore Park or Ventura Oxnard, but is there more potential financial aid out there? I haven't.
Yes, we actually have quite a bit of financial resources available for students to apply for and have access to. Those range from completing the FAFSA and being eligible for federal and state grants. There's a federal Pell Grant as well as some state grants that can cover the enrollment fees as well as some living expenses and books. Each of the colleges also have foundations that provide scholarships. And we're receiving both federal and state money to help us provide additional resources to students to help them through this pandemic. And with that money, we've purchased laptops for students, hotspots for students, and we actually provided $500 to $1,000 grants to students during the pandemic.
So living expenses?
Yeah. And just to help them, knowing that a lot of them are having tough times right now.
Do you know if that's...
We don't want them to choose between having to, sleep on a couch and go to school and even food insecurity. It was worse than it should have been before the pandemic, and the need has just gotten greater.
Before I go, I would be remiss. I want to really quickly just touch, wouldn't be a newsman if I didn't address. There was a professor in the news from Ventura College a couple of weeks ago.
Oxnard College.
I'm sorry, Oxnard College. Had an incident with a student that went viral is what they say. Can you give me any update on that situation? I know that professor was put on leave, but for people interested, is there any update there? When will we know the outcome of the investigation and what happens next?
Sure. And I appreciate you bringing that up because it's an incident that we're all very concerned about. And, I'd like to say that the vast majority of the interactions that students have with our faculty members, our staff, administrators, are positive, are how we want them to be. The behavior demonstrated in that video is not what we condone. And it's unfortunate that it occurred. But, I look at it as what can we learn from this? It has occurred, and it does show that there are some improvements that we could make, because having that occur one time is one time too many. And so an investigation is occurring, and that investigation will end up taking, I'd say, in the 3 to 4 month range, because it's not a fast process, and we're being very cognizant to follow the process correctly and honor the rights that both the student and the faculty member have throughout the process.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate you being willing to address that. And just thanks to everyone for coming on. I'll just editorialize again for a minute. I've lived in this community for a number of years. And now with my own daughter going through the high schools, it's just great to know that these colleges are there for her. And I've had so many success stories, whatever she chooses to do, whether it's right into work or transfer somewhere else. I've met so many people that have these stories. I started here and I ended up here. And I just think that's the best ringing endorsement for what's going on over at the community colleges. And I'm glad the Acorn has a way to just get the message out there. And because I think when people hear the deal and they listen to Diane's pitch, she's pretty good at it. It's hard to not seriously consider, especially in a time of a tough economy and everything. So just kudos to you guys and for what you do and the district as a whole.
Sports.
Well, that was a really nice. Diane, especially, I go way back with in Thousand Oaks. She's got such a passion for community colleges. I just meet so many people that have gone through one of those colleges. It's amazing. Well, it's good to be back, man.
Yeah.
It's been a little too long.
No, it's good to be back. I will say, we do this in addition to our newspaper stuff. It takes up a bit of time. So it was nice having the time off to just edit, but now, back to hosting, it is like, all right, Fridays are for the podcast again.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we really saw in the last month with what Allison's done and the team and you two editing, I mean, that's a big job.
Yeah.
When you put that kind of time into it, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that people have enjoyed and listening to us up to this point, and now I'm just hoping we're going to get a nice mix,
Yeah. I do want to take this opportunity to give a shout out. The Branching Out team has expanded. Part of the reason the show was the way it was for so long is because I would go into Kyle's office on Thursday and be like, what are we going to talk about today? And he'd be like, I don't know. And now we have Beyond the Acorn editor, Allison Montroy, who is scheduling interviews. She's brainstorming ideas. She's booking people. She's bringing a whole lot to the table that's relieving some of the stress of me and Kyle doing it. And I also want to give a thanks to David D.L. Lopez, who is our social media guy. He's one of the layout artists for the newspapers. He's awesome. If you follow us on Instagram, which you should do, it's Acorn Newspapers on Instagram. He's the one putting up all that content, and he's doing a lot to plug the show. And credit to both of them for all that they're doing and for volunteering to help out with the Branching Out team because they believe in this thing.
You know, I have to be honest. We'll get real again for a second. There were some weeks like I was kind of scared to share with people.
Yeah.
You know, just because of the quality product. I mean, and again, just because we're so busy and we're just trying to fit it in. But now, you know, I'm just so proud of what we did in the last month. And maybe if you didn't hear some of those episodes, say
go back and check them out.
Yeah, go and listen to them. We're not losing old episodes. They're all up there. So please, if you haven't, go out and check those episodes out. Even if you listen to a little bit at a time, I would encourage you to do so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been, of course, Kyle Jory, editor of the Thousand Oaks Acorn. Follow me on Twitter at Kyle B. Jory. Ian really needs the shout out, so please you.
Yeah. Ian Bradley, I'm a reporter for the Acorn Newspapers. You can find me on Twitter at Ian_reports.
Thank you, Elioff.
Thank you, Elioff, for coming in. Thank you to the Ventura County Community College District. Stay tuned. I am off this week that you're hearing this, so we have a pre-recorded episode. But yeah, stay tuned for next week. We're going to have some cool locals on to talk about climate change and the fight against it. All right. Well, yeah, we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks, folks.